Back together again, you and I wrapping up a busy show and a busy week, Friday, March 21st, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I opened the show wondering if local Tesla drivers are being harassed because of growing national anger over the role of the company's head, Elon Musk, in the Trump White House. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Senator Chris Caruso returned to the show. He chatted about several issues, including possible charter revision in Bridgeport. And we chatted with Republican State Rep. Joe Canino of Torrington. He talked about several measures voted out recently of the General Assembly's Labor Committee.
You know, within the past couple of days, I was just driving around, minding my own business, running errands, coming to and from here at the radio station. And I passed a couple of Tesla service centers, one here in Milford. Now, you know, you can't technically buy Teslas here in Connecticut because the state still is one of just five or six that doesn't allow direct-to-consumer sales from car companies, and that's been bogged down because the Car Dealership Association of the state, pretty powerful, but that's another discussion for another day. But, you know, in particular, passing in front of Tesla service center that's in Milford. And I looked over and you know it's bad, right? You know it's bad when a guy like me, now maybe it's akin to what I do for a living, but you know it's bad when a guy like me looks across and I'm actually slowing down. There wasn't too much traffic. And I say, hey, I wonder if any of these Teslas is going to be damaged. I wonder if any of these Teslas is going to be keyed, as they say, or scratching something with a key. I wonder if somebody's going to run up to those Teslas and spread their own feces over them. Yes, there are videos out there of people doing that. And if you have been on social media as much as I have, or even casually, you see what's popping up on social media. There are a lot of left-wing nutcases out there. I mean, you talk about AAA sickos out there. And, of course, you know why, because Elon Musk is involved with Donald Trump and Doge and all that. But I'm telling you, if I drove a Tesla, if you Connecticut people out there are driving Teslas, you had better be scared. I'm serious. I'd be concerned. Do you see what's going on all over the country? And now there are more scheduled, coordinated events to not just damage Teslas, but actually there are videos now of people harassing other people, giving them the middle finger, screaming at them, yelling at them, keying their car, because somebody's driving a Tesla. They may be the most apolitical person on the planet, but because of the crazies, the nut jobs, the people on the left that need their Thorazine and their Xanax adjusted, people are now scared. I'm reading these stories all over the country. People are scared to be driving the car they're driving. This is what the left does when it's angry. And I don't want to hear about January 6th. I've given you my theory on January 6th and how much I hated it. Let's move on. January 6th was years ago. Do not even try. Please don't waste my time today with saying, yeah, but January 6th, no. I live in the present. I don't dawdle in the past. American voters made up their minds regarding January 6th one way or the other. They either said it was much of nothing, or it was maybe one of the worst things to ever happen in the country. But we had an election, and that's what happened. But have you seen this? As Musk takes prominent role at the White House, violent attacks on Tesla dealerships spike. It's what the left does. They turn violent. Black Lives Matter, George Floyd. Targeting Jews at the Ivy League. Why is the left in this country so violent? Why are they? Well, Paul, where's the right violence? Take away January 6th. Where do we see the right attacking people for what they drive? Where do we see the right physically threatening people? Well, Paul, you know, the Bud Light boycott, and that was fine. And if the left wants to boycott Tesla, they can do that. That's the power of the purse. You want to boycott Tesla? I don't think it's smart, because just a little person will get hurt. The mechanic, the salesperson, the service tech. You're not going to take down Elon Musk. But my God, Musk critics have organized dozens of peaceful demonstrations at Tesla dealerships and factories across North America and Europe, but the attacks are keeping law enforcement busy. Prosecutors in Colorado are charging a woman last month in connection with attacks on Tesla dealerships, including Molotov cocktails thrown at vehicles and the words Nazi cars sprayed on a building. Hey, listen, if you're a left-wing nut listening to me right now, do you drive a Volkswagen? That was the original Nazi car. If you know anything about history, you drive a Ford? Oh, mom has a Ford, huh? You know Henry Ford was a raging anti-Semite, don't you? But boy, the nutcases on the left here, more and more stories. I'm seeing this pop up in my video feed. What gives? Are you afraid? Have you, like, started to look over your shoulder if you drive a Tesla? Or if your mother or father does, your daughter, your son, your grandson, your granddaughter, are you scared because of the depths that the psychotic, medication-soaked left has stooped to here? Don't believe me? Read the stories. And now I guess there are efforts to ramp this up. Why is the left so violent? Why is the left so violent in this country, whether it's George Floyd, whether it's anti-Jewish demonstrations at Columbia and at Yale and throughout the Ivy League, whether it's targeting Tesla? Why are leftists, especially over the past few years, if their medication isn't adjusted properly, why are they so violent? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. If you would just prefer to text me on this, I can understand it. You can text at 333-9422. But are you afraid to drive your Tesla? Are you afraid to shop for a Tesla? Did you ever think we would be in a part of America, in an era in America where people are being targeted? And this hit me the other night. People are being targeted for the car they drive. Can you imagine that? That's how psychotic the left is in this country. Critics of Elon Musk have organized dozens of peaceful demonstrations at Tesla dealerships across North America and Europe, but they are getting more violent. Musk continues to run Tesla as well as X and the rocket manufacturer SpaceX while also serving as a Trump advisor. Some of the most prominent incidents have been reported in left-leaning cities in the Pacific Northwest like Portland, Oregon, Seattle, where anti-Trump and anti-Musk sentiment runs high. An Oregon man facing charges after allegedly throwing several Molotov cocktails at a Tesla store and then returning another day, shooting out the windows. I guess his medication's doing all right, huh? In the Portland suburb of Tigard, Oregon, more than a dozen bullets were fired at a Tesla showroom last week, damaging vehicles and windows. The second time in a week, the store was targeted. These people need to be arrested and dropped down a big, deep hole. Are you afraid to buy a Tesla right now? I swear, I was driving by the Tesla service center in Milford on Route 1 the other day, and I'm looking over to see, hey, were any of the Teslas there, were they keyed? Was there any damage? This is how crazy the left is. Well, you're just saying the left. Yes, I am. Because they're protesting the kind of car you drive or a consumer drives, you know, a vehicle that they may have bought because of so-called progressive values. And I hope, and Pam Bondi came out and said it the other day, we're going to get these people on terrorism charges. Look, you want to scream and yell against Elon Musk all you want. That's fine. That's your right. But man, oh man, and again, you see now, if you do a little digging, This is an organized campaign that is being, and people can say, no, it's not. Read what the feds are saying. This is organized. Several deep-pocketed billionaires helping in this. Okay, and fine. Once again, if you want to protest against Elon Musk, that's fine. That's your right. Now, you may want to win elections. You may want to, you know, concentrate on that. But come on, these idiots. Oh, you drive a swastika car. No, the original swastika car is Volkswagen, yeah. Who started Volkswagen? Oh, you must be a Hitler lover because you're driving a VW Passat. Oh, I get it, yeah. Drive a Ford, one of the original mass anti-Semites. Henry Ford, yeah. In Las Vegas, several Tesla vehicles were set on fire Tuesday outside a Tesla service center with the word resist. Oh, yeah, the resistance. Here we go again. We've been hearing that for, what, 10 years now, 12 years? The resistance. Authorities said at least one person threw Molotov cocktails and fired several rounds from a weapon into the vehicles. Spencer Evans, the special agent in charge of the Las Vegas FBI office, said at a news conference, was this terrorism? Was it something else? It certainly has some of the hallmarks we might think in the writing on the wall. That's what they have to do. They have to collar some of these left-wing nuts, put them on trial, and drop them in a big hole. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. And I will give a little bit of a public service to any morons out there who are thinking of keying a Tesla, or like some guy did, taking his own excrement the other day and rubbing it on a Tesla. You do know that the Tesla Cybertruck and all these other Teslas, they've got like 8 video cameras running 24/7, 365. You do know that, huh? Or are you too dumb to even realize that? My God, we're in a country now where, you know, hey, if they don't get, they act like spoiled children, whether it's this, whether it's BLM, whether it's Antifa, whether it's the anti-Semitic rallies at Columbia. Hey, we're at the weekend again. Are we going to get another sob story from that Mahmoud Khalil? That guy, too? Shut up, him. But I am thrilled that this guy is back. You know, a lot of people over the past few months have said, hey, how's Chris Caruso doing? How's he doing? People say they used to love the Friday segment I did with him. Little speed bump health-wise, but he is back, and I guess better than ever. Mr. Caruso, how are you, sir? It's great to have you back.
I'm doing well, Paul, and it's good to hear your voice, and thank you for inviting me back. I always love the show and being on there on Fridays, yep.
Well, Chris, people were asking, and they send you their good wishes. So let's start. Boy, Chris, a lot has happened since you and I last talked. Let's talk about what's going on right now with the forefront. Chris, we had these 5 people connected to the Bridgeport absentee ballot scandal, which, oddly enough, is still going on since the last time you talked to me. They all entered not guilty pleas today. So viewing this from afar, as you have over the past few months, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, Paul, this is very serious. It's probably one of the first times that the state's attorney's office has gotten involved. Mm-hmm. State's attorney are the prosecutors for the state. And it's not being handled by the local state's attorney. It's being handled by the state attorney, you know, out of the Hartford area. And so it means there's a seriousness to this. And they've done the investigation and the evidence and so forth. Now, I'm a believer in the Constitution, the rule of law. Mm-hmm. So everyone is innocent until proven guilty. However, if they are convicted, any one of these individuals are convicted, there needs to be jail time. And I've said this before, because in order for the laws to have any teeth, any strength to them, people have to do jail time. And the message has to be sent, when you defraud the people of the state, defraud the people of Bridgeport, and through election corruption, it has to be taken seriously. So I'm pleased to see that the state's attorney's involved. It adds a level of seriousness, mm-hmm, and focus, and I think that's important. And in the legislature, there's new rules being put together dealing with absentee ballot abuse.
I saw that. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, today there's suggestion of a municipal board being formed that could step into any community and oversee the election so it's done fairly and honestly.
Chris, isn't part of the battle, too, and I read about what you said about these new laws that are being considered in Hartford, isn't part of the battle, though, not just getting these laws passed or as best as you can do, but getting people to get rid of the cynicism? Because they're going to roll their eyes, Chris, and they're going to say, yeah, whatever. They can put in whatever, but it's Bridgeport. That drives me nuts, and it's sad we're at that point.
You're right. And, you know, Bridgeport takes the bum rap on a lot of things. Sometimes it's frankly deserving, and other times it's not.
Yeah.
And most of the times it's not deserving. As I said before, Paul, because I did chair Government Administration Elections Committee for the legislature, there were other towns where absentee ballot abuse had taken place. There were other communities throughout the state, small rural cities, boroughs in the state, where there was election violation with filing for campaigns, you know, the donations and all.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't happen with Bridgeport. I think what brought attention to Bridgeport was the videotape where, you know, supposedly ballots were being, you know, stuffed into the ballot box at the various locations. I think that's what brought light to it. And it also said at that point that the state couldn't turn its head. Now, the only way that people will gain respect for the system, for the electoral process, is if people serve jail time that are convicted of the crime. And on top of it, you do one or two elections, and if it's done fairly and objectively, I think people will regain their confidence in the electoral process. But the rule of law has to mean something. It has to mean something. And the only way that the rule of law means something, you know, my mother always told me, probably yours too, especially in an Italian household, for every action, there's a consequence or a reaction, right?
Sort of, and, yeah.
right. And, she used to tell me, you know, Christopher, if you go to jail, you're going to sit in the jail cell because I'm not coming to bail you out.
There you go. Yeah.
So that stuck in my head.
My father, Chris, used to phrase it thusly, hey, kid, you're going to get a boot in the ass. That's what
that's right. And you know, so that put the fear of God in you, and it made you think. And that's what, you know, the rule of law in many ways is meant to do. And those who violate it have to be punished accordingly.
Hey, Chris, let's go over a few things here in about the 7 or 8 minutes we have left. Charter revision. I know our buddy Lenny has posted some ideas you have had for the city here. Give us some brief thoughts on that.
Yeah, I had put in to the commission several different ideas that the commission should look at. Probably one of the most important is the creation of an independent ethics commission with a code of conduct for elected officials, for city employees, for those folks doing business with the city, lobbyists and folks like that. And then I had other thoughts, too. But I think we have an ethics commission now, but it has to be made independent. And it also has to function. And most importantly, it has to be able to levy sanctions where violations have taken place.
Mm-hmm.
So to put it in the charter, it will have the importance and the necessary strength in order to do those things. So, and then code of ethics would spell out what's expected of people in elected office and as city employees.
How about Governor Ned Lamont? What kind of job you think he's doing? And does he run again, Chris? What do you think? I think he does. What do you think?
I do too, Paul. And I think he's doing a fairly good job.
Mm-hmm.
I have no criticism. I think he works well with people. He's definitely reached across aisle to the Republicans. He works with them. He works with the Democrats well. I think when he needs to be tough, he is.
Yeah.
And I think that bodes well for the state. So, yeah, I think he'll run again. I think he enjoys the job. I think he enjoys the challenge involved. Right now, there's a challenge over cutting back on the budget expenses because of there's an actual cap when it comes to spending. That was created back in 1991 mm-hmm. when the income tax came in. It was a balance. All right, I'm going to give you the income tax, Weicker said, but in return, we're going to cut expenditures. If you reach a certain cap, yeah. you can't go over it. And that's what they're experiencing now. But I do believe they'll get through it. There's been a surplus over $400 million that's projected for this year. So I think things are moving on the right track. I think the biggest thing is what's happening in Washington
yeah.
and how that will affect Connecticut with Medicaid, Medicare, and those programs. So that's something I think people have to keep an eye on and see what develops mm-hmm. from that. Yeah.
The always entertaining Chris Caruso on the Bridgeport Board of Education. It's entertainment
yes.
that you can't pay for.
Yep.
The
yep.
state wants to give lessons, actually. People think I'm kidding what I'm saying. No. Part
yep.
of the oversight is how to get along with each other. We're looking for yet another school superintendent. What do you think happens yep. here?
Well, I think the new superintendent, the acting superintendent's, I think doing a fairly good job.
Yeah.
He's definitely transparent. He's reaching out to different constituencies, and he seems focused on getting the job done. So I think he'll be in the mix for selecting, which I think helps the Board of Ed, because if they want someone that they've been working with who's doing a good job, he may be the guy they choose. So I'm not so much into this international search for
mm-hmm.
a superintendent.
Yeah.
Sometime you have someone good right in your backyard, and that's the one you want to work with. What's happening with the Board of Ed, again, Paul, is not unique to Bridgeport. There are
yeah.
Board of Eds throughout the state that have unfortunately been dysfunctional. There's been this friction between superintendent and the board members. And I think, that's what's happened. The other thing is the system has been underfunded, frankly, by both the state and the city. And it's reached a height now where they're $36 million in debt, which also heightens the disagreement, the level of disagreement, with the board, the superintendent, the city. I think what was a positive move is when Governor Lamont spoke with the commissioner of,
yeah.
of education,
yeah.
and they're bringing in a team,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's important. Now, the other thing is, I think they'll do an audit to figure out what's going on
yeah.
in the system. I know many members of the board have advocated for that, and I think a forensic audit is exactly what you need to see how money's being spent.
Mm-hmm.
But now the state will also have to put up in the sense of putting money into the system. The equal cost sharing, which is the
ECS
formula
yep.
for education,
yep. mm-hmm.
needs to be adjusted because it's affecting cities like Bridgeport adversely. And in the end, the only ones who suffer are the kids in the system.
Mm.
So I hope things will work out. I'm happy the state's getting involved and trying to move through things. And I think that's very positive. So I look forward to a good year with the Board of Ed. I know elections are coming up
mm-hmm.
This year for new board members. So we'll hear a lot of back and forth with candidates. But in the end, Paul, if you don't have a good school system, everything in the city is affected. Real estate, parents don't want to move into the city
mm-hmm.
where the school system isn't working to the fullest. We've got some really, really dedicated teachers that are committed. They could go to other towns and make more money, frankly,
yeah.
but they're committed to Bridgeport. And I think that all bodes well. It,
mm-hmm.
it's a foundation to improve. So I'm looking for, I'm a rooter for Bridgeport.
Sure.
Right? I'm in the fans section rooting for Bridgeport. And I'm hoping that things work out with the Board of Ed and the school system, the city and the state and get this moving in the right direction.
And Chris, finally, in about the 90 seconds we have left in this segment, the state of your party, the Democratic Party, of course, in Connecticut, is still solid from the governor's office to the constitutional offices to the House and Senate. But, boy, Mr. Trump won again. Two out of the last three times he's run. It would have been almost three times if it wasn't for 40,000 votes in three swing states, the House and the Senate. What does your party have to do? Rebranding, refocus? What do you think?
I don't think so. The Democratic Party is strong. It's always been for the working families,
mm-hmm.
for the poor. I think we've just got to reconnect with people.
Yeah.
I think that's what we did wrong last year with the election. And if we don't reconnect, it's to our loss.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to talk about what we've done. You know, there's a lot of good things under Joe Biden. I know people beat the crap out of the guy,
his
agent. We did a lot of good things, and people have to talk about those things. And I think if that's done, it's important. The other thing, Paul, is we've got to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
I think that's where we've lost to this politicians that, you know, with all the misinformation, the lying and everything going on, it turns people off. But the first thing is reconnect with the populace.
Mm-hmm.
You see what's happened last night, Arizona. Bernie Sanders, who's what, about 84 now? He goes, 5,000 people came to see him speak. That tells you something. People want to be connected. They want to be involved. And we, as a Democratic Party, have to reach back out to those people because we've lost a lot of the people that were the bedrock of the party. You know, the working families, those individuals, middle class, we've lost them. And we've got to reconnect to bring them back in.
Absolutely. Yeah. Chris, great to have you back. And we will continue next Friday, sir. Have a great weekend and we'll connect. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Paul. Take care now.
Appreciate it. There you go. He's back with his Friday thoughts. Always perceptive. Chris Caruso, longtime friend of the radio station right here at WICC. Labor Committee, the General Assembly's Labor Committee, that it sounds like they want to make it law that the rideshare companies open their books to their drivers and their employees. Now, is there some benevolence here or are there ulterior motives? Joining us right now, and he's been very vocal about this, State Rep Joe Canino. He represents District number 65 in the Torrington area as a Republican. Hey, Joe, it's Paul here on WICC. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good, Joe. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. I read this story about a push here to legislate the move that would make the ride-sharing companies, in a sense, go through their billing process to their drivers here, and the Democrats want this etched into law. What are your thoughts about this, and what do you think the actual motive is behind this?
Well, Paul, there already is transparency in these transactions, and that is that the driver sees immediately when they take any ride exactly how much they're going to be paid for that service, and that's about all that they're entitled to. Now, if the employer wanted to share more information, more power to them. But for state government to, like you said, force them to open their books, not only to the riders, not only to the drivers, but to their competitors as well, there's a big problem with government overreach with that. And the motive behind this is clear as day. It's to get the drivers for Lyft and Uber unionized, to get them to band together, to stoke their envy by forcing the company to disclose how much money is being charged on top of the money being paid to the drivers. And it really is just an overreach of state government.
Yeah. Now, Joe, I don't drive for these people. I've only taken an Uber or a Lyft once or twice, and it was in New York when I was seeing my son. But, you know, I heard the logic for this bill, explained by some legislative Democrats. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. How can these drivers be completely in the dark about what they're getting paid here? So is this, as you say, is this just a gradual effort here to try and, I don't know, stoke some envy or to say, hey, you should be paying us more? Because don't they get the information, as you said, up front?
They absolutely do. When they get the opportunity to take a ride, they can see exactly how much it's going to cost and exactly how long the ride is going to take. All this would require is that the full amount that the customer is paying for the ride is going to be placed there as well. So, the company might have to have some additional expenses to maintain the app or to pay insurance costs or to pay state compliance costs or federal costs associated with federal regulations. They might have a small profit margin. All of these things get factored into it, but all the driver is going to see, here's how much I'm getting paid, here's how much the company is getting, and it is really just going to, like I said, stoke the envy in those drivers, really get them incensed and really encourage them to unionize, and that is the clear idea for Democrats.
When Joe Canino, you pointed this out, as I'm sure in the debate on this bill, what did your Democratic counterparts say to you? How did they react to that?
Well, they really just said that the driver deserves to know what the company is making. And I countered saying it is really not up to us here in Hartford what the driver deserves to know.
Mm-hmm.
The exchange of information in that instance is a consensual negotiation between the employer and the employee. And actually, I misspoke. They're not employees. They are independent contractors.
Yeah.
That is another part. Other aspects of this bill seem to be treating them more like employees than independent contractors.
Mm.
And again, we're talking about a private business here with government, again, in the state of Connecticut, sticking its nose in and making things more difficult. I mean, they raised the fee for Uber and Lyft to register in this state to $50,000.
Yeah.
When asked why that is, oh, well, because other states are doing it. Okay, but did you use a formula to calculate why that fee is going to be needed to put in place? Are there, you know, costs to regulating these businesses? Well, we weren't given any of those answers. All that was said was, well, other states are doing it, so we figured we would as well.
As we're joined for another few minutes by Republican State Rep. Joe Cannino, 65th District, representing Torrington. We'll get back to open phones momentarily. So, Joe, I'm also reading in the various publications here, and I started to see something about the temperature of drinking water at some employers around the state. And apparently now we're concerned about heat injuries in the state here. Now, did I miss a rash of heat injuries here? Joe, please explain this to me here.
No, you did not, Paul. So this is Senate Bill 830. While well-intentioned, it is a completely duplicative, redundant piece of legislation that will do nothing but add regulations and headaches to our employers here. There's a number of different regulations in here, but one of the key ones that you pointed out requires an employer, and these pertain to employers who most of their employees work most of their day outside, so
yeah.
Agriculture work,
sure.
Maybe landscaping. The employer has to provide them with water, exactly, I believe it's 32 ounces of water,
okay.
And that water must be above or below 77 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
So we asked, you know, what if it's 78 degrees
yeah,
Fahrenheit,
what happens?
That water? That employer is liable for a civil suit.
So if the water is too warm, an employee could sue the boss?
Could sue the boss. Even further, if the temperature gets even a little bit hotter, over, I think it was 92 to 95 degrees, every 2 hours, the employer is required to give his employees a 10-minute break. Now, all of these things sound great in a vacuum, but
mm-hmm.
when you realize that these things are already regulated by OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, which
yeah.
is a federal agency, there really is no problem here. In one piece of testimony that we received showed that in the decade between 2011 and 2020, less than 30 individuals suffered serious heat-related illnesses in Connecticut
yeah.
on the job, and not a single person, fortunately, passed away because of a heat-related illness. So when the proponents of this bill talk about people dying and people getting severely hurt because of this, it's really not the case here in Connecticut. This is just a solution in search of a problem, and again, a vast overreach of government.
Yeah, and Joe, listen, again, back to the whole thing with the rideshare drivers, Uber and Lyft. I think you and the Republicans who've said this, all right, this is pandering. This is kissing mm-hmm. the backsides because, again, hey, look how much we're looking out for you, and you owe us. So if we pave the way to help you guys form a union, you're going to owe us and we'll owe you, and there's the quid pro quo. Joe, it's mind-numbing to me when we should be talking about lower taxes, lower electric bills, lower costs of doing business here. But, Joe, this is why, and people have alluded to me for years, hey, you should run for the General Assembly. And I said, no, because my head would explode because of stuff like this. I don't know how you do it, Joe. I don't know how you do it.
Well, my head is about to explode because one part of this that I missed, when it's above 80 degrees, the employer needs to remind his employees to drink water. One of the most basic human functions that we all have a natural, you know, willingness to do.
Oh, my God.
And here you have legislation forcing employers to remind their employees, talk about the nanny state.
Mm.
You know, like you said, the labor committee is focusing on things like this when they should really be focusing on how to attract more workers to the state of Connecticut, how to make this state more attractive for businesses. Yeah. You know, Senate and House Republicans have proposed legislation creating a construction pipeline. Mm-hmm. To increase the amount of apprenticeship opportunities and the amount of training opportunities for people wanting to get into the skilled trades. But meanwhile, you have the Labor Committee posting or promoting certain bills like we saw yesterday, where they're now going to give federal workers who were fired under the Trump administration mm-hmm. preference for state jobs. So where was the state of Connecticut when all of these insurance companies went under yeah. and laid off their employees, or manufacturers, or restaurants, or you name it, laid off their employees? Those employees never got preference for state jobs. Mm. Only the federal workers fired by the Trump administration. This is a clear attempt by the state administration, by Connecticut Democrats, to make a political statement here and play political favoritism with people's jobs.
Unreal. Unreal. Joe Canino, Joe, State Rep, Torrington, 65th District, Republican. Joe, thanks. We'll have you on down the road. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you.
Appreciate it.